This is West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Dave Mistich. It's 7:35. Recently, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin has been touting the successes of last year's Justice Reinvestment Act in reducing prison and jail populations, as well as reducing the recidivism rate for prior offenders. While those initiatives have proved successful for adults, problems remain in the juvenile justice system. Yesterday, Governor Tomlin and other state officials announced a partnership with the Pew Charitable Trust in hopes to better understand some of those issues and make improvements.
Between 1997 and 2001, West Virginia experienced the largest increase in youths confined to juvenile facilities of any state in the country and was one of only four states in the United States to increase commitment rates, even as other states were able to reduce both juvenile crime and commitments.
In fact, a 2013 study from Pew shows West Virginia saw a 94% increase in juvenile commitment rates during the 15-year period Governor Tomlin mentioned. That ranks the state worst in the country. In 2011, the state housed 327 juvenile offenders, up from 192 in 1997. Despite the state closing the youth industrial home in Salem last year after a lawsuit and criticism over its ineffectiveness on rehabilitation, Tomlin pointed to the results of that closure as providing better opportunities for young offenders.
The closure of the industrial home for youth triggered changes in facilities across the state. Young people, once housed at Salem, were transferred to our juvenile centers, where they are receiving better educational opportunities in an environment that better promotes rehabilitation.
In hopes to improve further, state officials are teaming up with the Pew Charitable Trusts to comprehensively study the juvenile justice system. The goal, Tomlin says, is to implement research-driven methods to help shape policy that keeps young people out of trouble while saving taxpayer money. As part of the study, Pew will evaluate programs from the Division of Juvenile Services, the Department of Health and Human Resources, and the State Department of Education. They will also examine demographics of youth offenders and what crimes are being committed. Jake Horowitz is the state policy director for Pew.
This is about achieving more public safety. It's about improving outcomes for kids. It's about enhancing accountability and doing all of those things while curtailing the taxpayer burdens of the correction system.
House Speaker Tim Miley was among the lawmakers, Supreme Court justices, and other officials that joined Governor Tomlin for yesterday's announcement.
Whenever we as a legislative body or legislative individual members, or the governor's office for that matter, tackle anything within the criminal justice system, there's always concern that it means that we're going to be more lenient. And that's not necessarily what this study is going to reveal to us.
Miley echoed Governor Tomlin and other state officials in emphasizing rehabilitation rather than incarceration and providing opportunities for young offenders to become contributing members of society.
We always lose sight of the fact that there is life after punishment. Obviously, community safety is paramount, but if we're going to put people in our criminal justice system with an expectation of leaving that system, then we have to be prepared for life after punishment.
Tomlin says an intergovernmental task force on juvenile justice and child welfare, made up of all branches of state government, will soon be created to review data trends, evaluate the programs for juvenile delinquents, and make policy recommendations for future legislation. Pew's study is expected to be complete by December, allowing lawmakers time to examine findings in time for the next regular session of the legislature, which begins in January. This is West Virginia Public Radio. It's 7:39. A flash flood watch is in effect until Friday evening for central, western, and eastern portions of the state. Today, mostly cloudy, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. Some storms could produce heavy rain and gusty winds, highs in the 70s and 80s. For Friday, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the 70s and 80s.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by Tamarack, the best of West Virginia in Beckley. Serving the fried green tomato sandwich from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Facebook.com/TamarackWV.
This morning, we take a look at the Turn This Town Around project in Matewan, where they too have found out about a possible grant funding for the community. Clark Davis takes us to southern West Virginia, where they hope to take the available funds, where they hope the available funds are key to the revitalizing the town.
Kelly Webb is a 24-year-old resident of Matewan. but she isn't your prototypical resident of the small town along the Tug River. The Detroit, Michigan native has only been in the area for 6 months. But in that short time, she's grown fond of her new home and wants it to succeed.
The younger generation, I feel, is an important part to community service projects. We basically set the precedence for even generations who are younger than us, and learning from the older generations and being a youth involved, it just sets, I guess, a pathway for when we have children.
Webb, along with a group of approximately 20 others, were in attendance in Matewan recently to find out the next step in the process of turning this town around. It's a project headed up by the West Virginia Community Development Hub to revitalize both Matewan in the southern part of the state and Grafton in the north. At meetings in both areas this week, the residents found out about the available funding for their projects. A total of $75,000 could come to the community to support ideas like computer labs, walking and biking areas, tours, and renovations of the historic jail.
It's going to take diligence, patience, and a full collaborative effort of everybody, not just one aspect. The young, the old, you know, even toddlers. Everyone's going to have to band together and really participate to turn the town around.
The meeting this week serves several purposes. First, to make the people of Matewan aware of the available funds, but also to make sure they realize there is no time like the present to brainstorm ideas that would help the town. Kent Spellman is the executive director of the West Virginia Community Development Hub and wanted the crowd to know the funds from the Claude Worthington Benedum Foundation wouldn't be there forever.
Let me put it this way. There is a sense of urgency about this. The next meeting is July 1st, and that's when the attendance taking starts. So there's a sense of urgency for you to quickly identify the projects and build teams around them so that you can access this funding in its entirety. There's going to have to be a lot of phone calling, emailing, talking to neighbors.
What Spellman was talking about was the need to create small teams for each project. The hope is with the available funding that 20 different projects could be funded. Spellman and others hope to get more people involved in order to complete all of them in the time frame allowed. Spellman thinks Matewan is a perfect place to undergo the challenge.
This is sort of like a little trial by fire to see, so what does Matewan really think about itself and what can it really accomplish? This is a challenge. It is a stretch. We understand that, but I think you're up to it.
Over the coming weeks, the groups will meet with members of the Development Hub at workshops to work through the application process for each project. Applications are due by August 1st. Webb says the people of Matewan realized that outside help was needed to turn the town into what they hope it could be.
I realize the people here are they're just beautiful people. They're amazing. They live in the mountains. They're in a rural community, but they make it work. And realizing that, sometimes you need someone from the outside to come in and say, hey, we want to help you.
The groups will meet at workshops starting July 1st. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Clark Davis in Matewan.
The Unlucky Princess is the name of a new children's theatrical work being produced in Morgantown. The show was commissioned by a professional theater company out of West Virginia University. Glynis Board has the details.
The production comes from the Mountain State Rep, the professional summer theater company out of West Virginia University's School of Theater and Dance. Jerry McGonigal, associate director of the School of Theater and Dance, says when choosing what to focus on this summer, they decided to try to do what they do best.
When we started looking at the demographics of Morgantown and the audience, you know, there's musical theater, there's public theater, empty pockets, but there isn't anything for children that is professional. So it really features some of the strong points of our program, our costume. We have one of the only puppetry programs in the country. We're one of two, which is, you know, hard to imagine. So it's just kind of a no-brainer that this is where we should go. So we signed on a playwright. We commissioned her to create a new piece for us that would feature that part of our program, our puppets and large characters. So it's got this kind of Muppet-esque feel to the production. It really features what we do well. We built the play to not insult children, but to kind of honor that they're a lot smarter than we think they are. And we're going to see what happens.
The play is called The Unlikely Princess. The playwright, Deborah DeGeorge Harbin, started writing it in March. Five cast members began rehearsing in May. Jim Nipple, director and visiting professor of playwriting and directing at the school, says it's been a developing and evolving process.
Basically, the frame of the play is There's a mom and her two kids. She's trying to get her two kids to go to bed, and her daughter had a tough day at school, getting called names and feeling like she's not very, she doesn't fit in very well. And so as they're getting ready to tell a bedtime story, the daughter says she wants to create a story. And so she creates a story about a princess who doesn't fit in at home and ends up going off on her own kind of journeys.
Nipple explains that the story is spun out of objects found in the bedroom and tries to capture the essence of playing make-believe.
So the princesses ate wafer cookies, and the queen came in with the wise old woman who was sort of crazy.
Beautiful, Landon, beautiful!
This starts out as like a real-life situation and then evolves into the story that's being told with the kids and the mom.
Adam Messenger, a recent BFA graduate from the acting program, is the actor behind several puppet characters in the play. Some are hand puppets, and one character, an old man named Zeke, he has to play on his knees wearing a huge mesh head. He says the characters become more fantastic and imaginary as the kids dive deeper into their world of pretend.
With a puppet, it's only on your hand, and so you have to engage your body, but then also just see how you can explore with this one limb, your arm, to convey a whole range of these different emotions, whether they're angry at somebody or whether they're sad about something or trying to chastise somebody.
You have to be extremely specific and know where your body is at all times, and that then helps them really read and connect to the people on stage and to the audience.
Jessica Morgan Bishop plays the mom in the show. She's also the associate professor of stage movement at the School of Theater and Dance. And she made special contributions to the show possible when she brought her 5-year-old daughter in to critique rehearsals.
She was in here the other day giving us notes of what was funny and what wasn't funny and what made sense and what didn't make sense. And she had her notebook and she was giving Jim notes as well. So
legitimately?
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, she's like, that doesn't make sense, or that was really funny, or that wasn't really funny, or you should try this. And so she's seen enough theater that she understands the concept of it and what the rehearsal was about, and has been in rehearsals before, but and everyone was very welcoming and going, okay, this is our target audience. Is it funny? Is it scary? Does this play? And they were really great in asking her opinion. And
children's theater, it's fun because it's a whole different sort of ball game.
That's recent graduate from the theater school's studio acting program, Hannah Redmond. She plays the unlucky princess.
Kids are wonderful. They're sort of a blessing and a curse at the same time, in that when they're paying attention, they're so focused and they're so invested, the way that, you know, we as actors sort of thrive on that kind of audience energy. You feed off of it, but when they're not paying attention, they're not paying attention. So it's really cool because you really have to hook them and keep them invested in the story. And so children's theater is just so much, it's high energy. And this show is really fun. And, you know, it's not a complicated story, but there's a lot of big, like, plot points that are really fun and really interesting. So, you know, it's our job to sort of keep all of the kids, you know, following with us so they don't get confused, because if they get confused, then they get bored, and then they don't pay attention anymore.
Right.
So it's really, really, it's a really fun sort of project, children's
it
theater.
It sounds like I'm ill fate.
The show is happening over the next couple weekends at the Creative Arts Center at West Virginia University. For West Virginia Public Radio, I'm Glynis Ford in Morgantown.
West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Keep up with all the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Find great stories, photos, and videos, and you can subscribe to our West Virginia Morning podcast. We're interested in your comments. You can send them to feedback@wvpublic.org. Follow us on Twitter @WVPublicNews and find us on Facebook. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting's news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Dave Mistich.